reduced to the self-sufficient. The state must step in and ensure such outcomes. We'll go into Dr. Reich's positions much larger here shortly. Who's responsible for education? Is it the government? Well, how about business? Here's what big business says about education. In our dream, we have limitless resources, and the people yield themselves with perfect docility to our molding hand. The present educational functions fade from our minds, and unhampered by tradition, we work our own goodwill upon a grateful and responsive rural folk. We shall not search for great artists, musicians, doctors, statesmen, of whom we have ample supply. The task is very simple. We will organize children and teach them to do in a perfect way the things their fathers and mothers are doing in an imperfect way. That's from Frederick Gates, a contemporary of Woodrow Wilson's, who wrote in The Country School of Tomorrow. Woodrow Wilson, now there's an interesting character. What did Woodrow Wilson say about education? Hang on to your hats, folks. This one's a very important quote. We want one class to have a liberal education. We want another class, a very much larger class of necessity, to forego the privilege of a liberal education and fit themselves to perform specific, difficult, manual tasks. And you thought slavery was dead with the Civil War. Well, I use that term loosely. We could talk a lot more about that war and what it did to us, and that's probably the greatest single time of change to education in America, because we saw a lot of changes in education at that time. If we have time, we'll get into that later on this morning or maybe tomorrow. Charlotte Thompson Iserby, who, by the way, is the one we hope to have with us tomorrow, wrote in The Deliberate Dumbing Down of America, "The mind of the average American became trained or conditioned to accept the idea that education exists solely for the purpose of getting a good-paying job in the global workforce and in the economy." Boy, don't we learn that? We go to school to get a good job, to make good grades, to graduate, and if we do well enough, to get a scholarship and go on to college and get out and get a good job and work for 40 years and we retire just over broke. That's the great American way. Well, who's responsible for education? The government? Big business? How about the teachers and the teachers' union? Teachers' union says, it's the business of teachers to run not merely schools, but the world. That's from A Sociological Philosophy of Education. Edward Thorndike, and I'm sure we recognize that name. If you've ever had a college textbook, you've seen the name Thorndike probably on the spine of that book. It was with Columbia Teachers College in 1929. Edward Thorndike says academic subjects are of little value. Benjamin Bloom, the father of mastery learning, said the purpose of education is to change the thoughts, actions, and feelings of students. And Amy Gutman in Democratic Education wrote, the primary task of the public education system is to produce good democratic citizens. Folks, we need to drop the term public school from our vocabulary. They're not public schools. They're government schools. And Carolyn Warner, former Arizona Superintendent of Public Instruction, said, those who educate are more to be honored than those who bear the children. The latter give them only life. The former teach them the art of living. We have a caller calling into the show this morning. Go ahead, caller. Are we on the air? All right. Some technical difficulties here. Okay. What is education? The transfer of values from one generation to the next. Folks, that's teaching character, which is a very religious exercise. Thomas Jefferson said, to compel a man to furnish contributions for the propagation of opinions which he disbelieves or abhors is sinful and tyrannical, and yet we have a government that taxes us to teach our children and other children beliefs that we may not agree with. What's the way of the free American? Back when I was in high school, we learned a little formula from Rich DeVos, the founder of Amway, an American entrepreneur. It went like this, MMW equals NR plus HE times T. MMW is man's material welfare, everything that takes for a society to be wealthy, equals NR, that's our natural resources. A nation has natural resources under the ground, but of course those aren't worth much until we bring them up, and that takes the next thing, plus HE, which is human energy. Well, natural resources under the ground and human resources or human energy to dig it up with a shovel is one thing, but what's the great multiplier? The multiplier, of course, is how big a tool do you have, so times T. The critical issue then And the difference between a capitalistic society or a free society and a socialistic or collectivistic society is who controls or owns the tools. MMW equals NR plus HE times T. We come back from a break in just a minute. We'll talk about how we can apply that same formula to education and give us a greater understanding of who should be in charge of education.
Warning. Dr. Coben's show is not recommended for anyone with an aversion to deep thinking and critical analysis.
The people never give up their liberties, but under some delusion. Edmund Burke.
Hi, this is Dr. John Coben. As many of you know that the Tyranny Response Network is listener-supported, and here's Gene Papke to tell you how you can support the Tyranny Response Network.
That's right, John. Folks, if you support TRN and you want to help financially, here's how. We at TRN are a listener-supported broadcast, but we don't take a notions, potions, and lotions approach to fundraising. If you own, operate, or work for a company with bad paper, that is, non-performing assets, we can turn that garbage into gold. Simply go to our website, NPPros, that's N as in non, P as in profit, PROS as in professionals, your non-profit professionals, that's NPPros.com. And remember, we raise funds, but without fundraisers.
Log on today to www.npros.com and find out how you can be a vital part in supporting the Tyranny Response Network.
In Common Sense, Thomas Paine writes, "Could we take off the dark covering of antiquity pertaining to the origin of kings and of the state and trace them to their first rise, we should find the first of them nothing better than the principal ruffian of some restless gang, whose savage manners or preeminence subtly obtained him the title of chief among plunderers, and who by increasing in power and extending his depredations overawed the quiet and defenseless to purchase their safety by frequent contributions."
If you have a question or comment for the show, please dial 864-201-6955. That's 864-201-6955, weekday mornings from 7:30 to 9. You may also email your questions and comments 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, to questions@policyofliberty.net. That's questions@policyofliberty.net.
You're listening to TRN, the Tyranny Response Network. It's roughage for your brain.
And good morning, folks. Welcome back again to the TRN Network. Ben Graydon here with Parents United and Responsibility for Education, talking to you this morning in lieu of Dr. John Coben, who's on travels this morning. Man's material welfare equals natural resources plus human energy times tools. Let's transfer that equation over to something a little closer to our lives than just our physical well-being. Let's talk about man's societal welfare. Let's talk about our families. The totality of what makes a society great. What would be the equivalent of our natural resources in that equation? I think it would be our children. Man's societal welfare equals our children. That's our natural resources. What's the thing that makes our children come to life, that makes them become productive adults, that gets the natural resources out of the ground, as it were? Well, that would be their education. So man's societal welfare equals our children plus their education. And what's the multiplier? What's the thing that makes that education stronger in terms of its quality and in terms of its quantity? Well, that would be our schools. So just as the difference between a capitalistic society and a collectivistic society, when it's speaking of material welfare, was who owns and controls the tools, just the same could be said for our man's societal welfare, that the controller there, that the critical issue is who owns and controls the means of education, or who owns and controls the schools. And yet we don't think about that when by default we put our children on that big yellow monster, that school bus, and send them off to a government school. It wasn't always this way. The first education law in America was the old Deluder Act of 1647 in the Massachusetts Bay Colony that required, when we had 50 households in a community, they had to hire a teacher. Had 100 households, they had to set up a school building. What was the purpose of that, folks? It was to teach the children to read the scriptures. Well, wasn't that a violation of the First Amendment, some would say? Well, I don't think so. The First Amendment came along about 150 years later. We'll talk a lot more maybe this morning, if we have time, about how that education changed in the nation and how it came about to change from state to state. But understand that our educational background in this nation started out with a biblical background and to teach children to read the Bible. The founders of our nation, the signers of our founding documents, were for the most part homeschooled, and yet John Adams remarked in 1765, "A native of America who cannot read or write is as rare an appearance as a comet or an earthquake." And what were the early education results? Well, in 1840, according to the census, 90% of white adults were listed as literate. In 1860, just 20 years later, 94% of white adults were listed as literate. Compared to 1993, according to the U.S. Department of Education, 50% of adult Americans are literate. So have we gotten better for our government schools? I don't think so. Well, the Unitarians came along and they changed education, and of course we brought the Prussian school system in. We created a state school system modeled after the socialist one that was put in place in Germany. Many denominational churches went along on the basis of what they shared in common, hence the term common schools. Industry and big government took over education using psychological and experimental methods. They took over teacher colleges. They took over textbook publishing. We lost control of academics and moral standards as parents that went to the government. And now we've got John Dewey 100 years ago coming along saying every teacher should realize that he's a social servant set apart for the maintenance of the proper social order and the securing of the right social growth. In this way, the teacher is always the prophet of the true God and the usherer in of the true kingdom of heaven. In 1908, John Dewey said, "Our schools are performing an infinitely religious work. They are promoting the social unity. Religion associated with dogmatic beliefs we see disappearing. It's the part of man to work for the transformation of all practical instrumentalities of education till they are in harmony with these ideas." See, folks, even the big education leaders understood that education was a religious exercise. Well, in 1917, the Education Trust, which we also know as the Money Trust, maybe we'll have time to talk about that tomorrow. This is Rockefeller, Carnegie, Harvard University, the National Education, and so forth. Came together and designed to impose on the young the ideal of subordination, according to Benjamin Kidd. They killed off Yankee entrepreneurialism. They traded creativity for human resources. They dumbed down common schooling. And again, we hope to talk about that tomorrow with Charlotte Iserby. Well, today we know that there's a battle going on between parents and government as to who should control schooling. And unfortunately, government has become the choice, the default choice of most people. Rob Reich says about homeschooling, if it's permissible for parents to homeschool their children, then we'll have gone a long way toward identifying the wide scope of parental authority over the education of their children, or put conversely, towards severely limiting the role of the state in educational supervision. Who is this guy? Who is this Rob Reich? He's a Stanford professor of political science. In the fall of 2001, Dr. Reich delivered a talk in San Francisco at the annual meeting of the American Political Science Association. The speech was entitled "Testing the Boundaries of Parental Authority: The Case of Homeschooling." It was to become Chapter 6 in Reich's book, Bridging Liberalism and Multiculturalism in American Education. From the perspective of a freedom-loving American, the paper was seriously flawed in both its underlying premises and its conclusions, but it's significant in that it attempts to build an academic foundation of what could well become a legal argument against the most important American right, the right to raise our own children in accordance with their own values and beliefs. Folks, we're under attack as the American family. The government doesn't want us doing what we're doing, and if you don't believe that, look around and see the number of children that are taken from their home for less than legal reasons. Shortly after this paper's release, I wrote several critiques about the paper. It remains, in my view, it's a very dangerous piece of work, but thoroughly examined, it actually builds a solid case to make homeschooling mandatory for any American family that values freedom and a return to constitutional government. Folks, all parents are homeschoolers. If you have children, you are a homeschooler. Unfortunately, most of us by default give that over to that education responsibility to someone else. We're letting someone else interfere. You know, the Bible teaches us many things about education, and we'll go into that as well today, as far as whose responsibility it is to educate our children. But we know that the Bible also teaches us that husbands are to love our wives. So if we wouldn't delegate the loving of our wives, gentlemen, to someone else, why would we delegate the teaching of our children to someone else? Oh, sure, we can get assistance. A wise husband will get the assistance of a chef or a florist every now and then to help love his wife. But he does not delegate to them the loving of his wife. And we know that's obscene. And yet we think nothing about it when it comes to our children. We give our children to someone else to raise. So we'll talk in a little bit about what the Bible says about educating children, about whose responsibility it should be, about who has that role. And when we come back from the break, we'll talk a little bit more about Dr. Rob Reich and his paper.
Disinfecting the Modern Mainstream Media, Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben.
We have the rights as individuals to give as much of our own money as we please to charity. But as members of Congress, we have no right so to appropriate a dollar of public money. Congressman Davy Crockett.
You're listening to the Tyranny Response Network. Go ahead, make your day.
The law of non-contradiction. The same thing cannot at the same time both belong and not belong to the same object and in the same respect. Aristotle.
This is Dr. John Coben. Visit policyofliberty.net. That's www.policyofliberty.net on the web. You'll find there books and articles written by Dr. John Coben, that's me, the Tyranny Response Unit, regarding things related to covenant marriage, allodial land titles, and free market economics. You'll also find there portraits of famous economists, including their biographical information and links to their famous works, as well as many, many quotations for liberty. Visit policyofliberty.net on the web today and find a wealth of information to help advancement of the truth.
If you have a question or comment for the show, please dial 864-201-6955. That's 864-201-6955, weekday mornings from 7:30 to 9. You may also email your questions and comments 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, to questions@policyofliberty.net. That's questions@policyofliberty.net.
Liberalism is not to be tossed lightly aside, but to be hurled with great force.
And good morning, folks. Welcome back. Sorry for the dead spot there. We're talking about Dr. Rob Reich and his paper called How to Regulate Homeschoolers. He cites in that paper the U.S. Supreme Court case Wisconsin versus Yoder and the Sixth Circuit Court's 1987 decision in Mozart versus Hawkins County School Board of Education. The Yoder case, in which Amish parents were granted an exemption from compulsory attendance laws, raises a number of difficult questions about the scope of religious liberty, about the significance of claims that a cultural group's very existence may be threatened by state regulations, and about how much schooling is necessary to develop the bare essentials of citizenship. The Mozart case, in which Christian fundamentalist parents were not granted an exemption from state regulations requiring public school children to read from textbooks, exposing them to a diversity of value orientations, raises questions about how the clash between religious conviction and secular authority should be resolved within public schools, about whether exposure to value diversity constitutes an indoctrination in secular humanism, and about the limits of state authority in prescribing curricular materials for students. But Reich demurs that the critical issue in both cases ought to have been a widely applicable criterion of the limits of parental authority in education. And he states we should stop fixating on Yoder and Mozart. We should instead be looking at a burgeoning and compared to the number of Amish defectors or Christian fundamentalists challenging public school curricula, far more prevalent educational phenomenon, which is homeschooling. He lays it on the line right at the beginning. Homeschooling represents the paradigmatic example of the realization of complete parental authority over the educational environment of their children. In no other setting are parents as able to direct in all aspects of the education of their children, for in homeschools they're responsible not only for determining what their children shall learn, but when, how, and with whom they shall learn. If it's permissible for parents to homeschool their children, then we'll have gone a long way toward identifying the wide scope of parental authority over the education of their children, or put conversely, toward severely limiting the role of the state in educational supervision. And he asks, should parents have the authority to educate their children of any and all ages, apart from any formal institutional setting, public or private, when in current practice the regulations are minimal, often unenforced, and sometimes non-existent? Homeschooling thus illustrates in its purest form the instantiation of parental authority over the education of their children, and therefore provides the ideal test case of the boundaries of this authority. He identifies, quote, a trilogy of interests in education, the parents, the states, and the child's. I argue here, says Reich, that while each party shares an interest in the development of children into normal adulthood, the state has an independent interest in educating for citizenship, and the child has an independent interest in education for autonomy, neither of which may be shared by parents. On the basis of these three interests, and a consideration of what to do when such interests clash, I argue, Reich argues, that at a bare minimum, one function of any school environment, get this folks, must be to expose children to and engage students with values and beliefs other than those of their parents. Because homeschooling is structurally and in practice the least likely to meet this end, I argue that while the state should not ban homeschooling, it must nevertheless regulate its practice with vigilance. Why this particular study? Reich tells us, homeschooling is an ideal test case for political theorists arguing about the boundaries of parental and state authority over children's education. From a strictly theoretical point of view, the very structure of homeschooling raises questions about whether the interests of the state in education can be met in a setting where parents control both the academic program and social interactions of children, and can, if they so desire, effectively shield children from exposure to anything that offends the values and beliefs of the parents. Reich describes the interests of the three parties, the parents, the state, and the child, thus. Parents have two kinds of interest in their child's education, he believes. The first is self-regarding, in that parenting is for many people a central source of meaning in their lives. If we think in commonsensical terms that adults often have children in order to fulfill their goal to have a family and to live life as part of a family, the sense in which child-rearing is something in the self-regarding interests of parents becomes clearer. So that regards a selfish interest, Reich says. Beyond that, Reich holds, quote, the parental interest in exerting authority over the educational provision of their children is also grounded in the interest of the child themselves. Children are dependent beings, not yet capable of meeting their own needs or acting their own interests. Parents, it's generally believed, are better situated than the state and the children themselves to act in the best interests of their children, or in an alternate formulation to promote their general welfare. In a modern society, the welfare of a child depends in part on being educated. Therefore, as the guardian of their parents' best interests or welfare, parents have an interest in the education of their children, that their children receive. Well, this position is problematic, Reich believes, because after all, quote, judges routinely make rulings on the basis of the best interests of the child. It's not of logical necessity that a child's parents are the agents who will act on these best interests. Others, grandparents, aunts and uncles, or state officials, might be better able to promote the welfare of the child. And of course, when parents are clearly negligent or harmful to their children, whether intentionally or not, the state intervenes and awards guardianship to a relative or foster care family, or in the most dire situation to the state itself, at a state orphanage, for example. Who's to say, then, that the parents are best situated to pursue the best interests of the children? So says Rob Reich. Well, Reich concludes, we cannot interpret best interests only from the perspective of the parents. When conflicts about the education of children arise, parents cannot wield a trump card based solely on their own understanding of their child's best interests. While parents clearly have substantial interest in the education of their children, it appears highly unlikely that they will be so weighty as to justify a claim that parents should command complete authority over the education of their children. Well, the state has a twofold interest in the education of the child as well, says Reich, and first, in providing children a civic education such that they're familiar with and able to participate in the political structures of society, and second, in performing a backstop role to the parents and assuring that children receive a basic education sufficient to allow them to become adults capable of independent functioning. Well, how important is this function of the state? Reich insists that it's valid. He cites Yoder. Providing public schools ranks at the very apex of the function of the state. And he cites Brown versus Board of Education. Today, education is perhaps the most important function of state and local governments. Bottom line, the state has legitimate interest in educational authority based on providing children with the capacities to become able citizens. And because, quote, all children need to grow into adults who possess a baseline set of social, emotional, and intellectual competencies that enable them to navigate and participate in the familiar social and economic institutions of society, the state must provide it. Of these two distinct interests in the education of the children, first, that children receive a civic education, second, that children develop into adults capable of independent functioning, Reich says, the parents and the state share the second interest, but not necessarily the first. Because of that, Reich asks, should the state's interest in developing citizenship trump parents' interest in education when parents do not share the state's civic goals for their children? Can the state sometimes tolerate, if the stability of the state is not threatened, parents who will not provide an education that develops requisite citizenship capacities? Finally, as to the interests of the children themselves in education, Reich says that children have an interest in developing adults capable of independent functioning and that children have an interest in becoming autonomous. These interests of the child can conflict with those of the parents and the state with the parents when, for example, parents seek through the educational environment and elsewhere to satisfy an expressive interest in molding their children into persons without regard to the will of the children themselves, and with the state, for example, when, quote, the right of students to express themselves politically in schools clashes with the power of the state to control the educational environment of the school. Folks, when we come back from the break, we'll talk some more about Dr. Rob Reich and his paper about controlling homeschooling.
You're listening to TRN.
Public schools will never excel because they lack intellectual capital and have to compensate for too many social problems. Daniel Golden.
Hi, this is Dr. John Coben with Integrity Group. Why is it so difficult for Christians to be good stewards of their finances? We know that God works miracles in people's lives, but He has not chosen to provide manna from above to help us meet our needs as He did with the ancient Israelites. As Christians, we should be leading the way as good stewards. Since we do not spend money on vices like non-Christians do, we should be able to save more. We want to work hard and save our money so that we can have something to give to missions and to the needy. In addition, we want to regularly set aside a portion for retirement. Christians should not have to rely on taxpayer-funded government programs for retirement. No Christian wants to become a burden to their family or church during the ever-lengthening period of old age. At Integrity Group, we are dedicated to providing personalized service, finding effective ways to protect and increase your hard-earned money. We are an independent financial planning firm. We specialize in finding creative custom solutions to meet your savings needs. Our offices are located at 514 Pettigrew Street in downtown Greenville. Make an appointment with Integrity Group today at 864-244-6464. That's 864-244-6464.
Life, liberty, and property do not exist because men have made laws. On the contrary, it was the fact that life, liberty, and property existed beforehand that caused men to make laws in the first place. Frederick Bastiat.
Warning. Dr. Coben's show is not recommended for anyone with an aversion to deep thinking and critical analysis.
If you have a question or comment for the show, please dial 864-201-6955. That's 864-201-6955, weekday mornings from 7:30 to 9. You may also email your questions and comments 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, to questions@policyofliberty.net. That's questions@policyofliberty.net.
Welcome to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. Dr. Coben is an author, columnist, financial planner, and international lecturer.
He holds a PhD degree in public policy, MA degrees in economics and business economics, and is a graduate of Reformed Bible College. Dr. Coben is an outspoken critic of public schools, government regulation, the IRS, paper money, welfare, and abortion. An evangelical Christian and the father of six homeschooled children, Dr. Coben is applauded by listeners across America and around the world as a champion of liberty, limited government, free markets, and peace. Now let's join Dr. Coben with Christian Worldview.
Good morning and welcome back to the TRN Network this morning. This is Ben Graydon sitting in the very large chair of Dr. John Coben. Ben Graydon with Parents United and Responsibility for Education. By the way, our website is www.pureeducation.com. That's share the E, make it one word, P-U-R-E-D-U-C-A-T-I-O-N, pureeducation.com. Be happy to have you go there and look around a little bit and be happy to talk to you folks if you'd like some more information about what it is that we do, which is basically empowering parents to take back their most important responsibility, their God-given right, their God-given job of educating their own children. All parents are homeschoolers. If you have a child and you think that you can't do it, folks, have me and my wife come and do a seminar for you. We'll show you that you can do it. In fact, it's no more difficult than teaching your child to put on his socks, to walk, to say the alphabet, to put his oatmeal in his face in the morning. So all parents are homeschoolers. We've been dumbed down and conditioned to believe that it takes a professional educator to do it. If it doesn't take a professional to take an aspirin, it doesn't take a professional to teach your child the alphabet and what to read and how to read and do it. Children are self-taught. I'm getting ahead of myself here. I could give you the whole seminar, but children are self-taught. Once a child knows how to read, basically he's got it conquered, folks, and you're just a coach along the way, so you can do it. And we'll be happy to help you with some pointers there. I want you to understand that education is your responsibility. Contrary to that, of course, is Dr. Rob Reich, who's a professor of political science at Stanford University. And we're talking this morning about the paper that he wrote in 2001 about controlling homeschooling, the state interest in regulating homeschooling. He's talking about the three parties that have an interest in education. One, he says, is the parents, which he says is very minimal. Two is the state, and the third is the actual child himself. He's talking about children have a right to express themselves politically. For example, in schools, when they clash with the power of the state to control the educational environment of the school. And then their second reason why he says that children have an interest in education is because, quote, it precludes the possibility that they will be ethically servile. He's scared to death of that term, ethically servile. Because children are not the property of their parents, nor of the state, because they possess human dignity as human beings, they ought not to be educated so as to be made servile to their caretakers. Neither parents nor the state can justly attempt to imprint indelibly upon a child a set of values and beliefs, as if it were an inheritance one should never be able to question, as if the child must always defer and be obedient. To do so would, in effect, render the child servile. In developing through education a basic capacity for critical deliberation, in exposing a child to and engaging a child with diverse values and beliefs, a child learns to think for himself or herself enough to surpass the threshold of ethical servility. When the interests of all three groups clash, Rice says, no one set of parents, states, or child's interests can trump the others and justify sole authority for any party over educational provision. Neither parents nor the state nor children themselves can unilaterally and without countervailing balance direct and control the educational environment of children. But since no one group may dominate homeschooling, the educational arrangement which both the theory and practice tilts most heavily in the direction of parental interest and authority should be permissible only when the interests of the state and the child in education can be met. But, Reich says, parental authority must end, and this is a quote, parental authority must end when its exercise compromises the development of their children into adults capable of independent functioning or when it disables or retards the development of minimal autonomy in children. Furthermore, if parental authority over education does not conduce to the self-sufficiency and independence of their children, the state must step in and ensure such outcomes. Folks, we could just stop right here and talk a lot about what the state is doing to us in their schooling system, because it's certainly not teaching our children to be independent and self-sufficient. It's teaching them to be dumb, to be followers of the masses, to be sheeple people. Well, some parents are more dangerous than others in Reich's eyes. Few people, he says, wish to defend the authority of parents who plainly care too little. The problem arises over parents who, as it were, care too much in seeking to prevent the development of autonomy in their children. I mean to suggest here, Reich says, that parents who wish to control the socialization of their children so completely as to instill inerrant beliefs in their own worldview or unquestioning obedience to their own or others' authority are motivated often by a fervent care for, not neglect of their children. Even when defined minimally, some parents may object to the idea that their children should receive an education that promotes their critical thinking and capacities for reflection on their own and others' ends. Well, folks, I don't know anybody like that. Being minimally autonomous, I claimed, was in the interest of the child for personal and civic reasons. The fact that autonomy is necessary for citizenship makes education for autonomy an interest of the state as well, Reich says. Well, in order to develop this autonomy, Reich insists is a necessary goal of education, he says. It must be the function of the school setting to expose children to and engage children with values and beliefs other than those of their parents. To achieve minimal autonomy requires that a child know that there are ways of life other than that into which he or she has been born. And in order for this to happen, then at a bare minimum, the structure of schooling cannot simply replicate in every particularity the values and beliefs of a child's home. Homeschooling fails here, Rice says, if there's an educational environment that might potentially be able to replicate the values and beliefs of a child's home, homeschooling is it. In homeschooling, parents are able, after all, to control not only the curriculum, but also the social environment of their child. Parents can severely limit social interaction and thereby curtail the opportunities that their child will have to encounter other children from different backgrounds. When we come back from the break, I'm going to spend some time going through this article piece by piece and showing why it's a thoroughly bad article, why the ideas that Rob Reich is espousing here, not only do they represent the view of the state towards education, but there's things that we need to look at very, very severely and ought to motivate us to get out there and do whatever it takes to educate our own children. So we'll be back very shortly.
You're listening to TRN.
Tired of superficial and dull talk radio? Try some ear candy for thinking people. Listen to Liberty Minute with Dr. John Coben.
This is Dr. John Coben. Visit policyofliberty.net. That's www.policyofliberty.net on the web. You'll find there books and articles written by Dr. John Coben, that's me, the Tyranny Response Unit, regarding things related to covenant marriage, allodial land titles, and free market economics. You'll also find there portraits of famous economists, including their biographical information and links to their famous works, as well as many, many quotations for liberty. Visit policyofliberty.net on the web today and find a wealth of information to help advancement of the truth.
If you have a question or comment for the show, please dial 864-201-6955. That's 864-201-6955, weekday mornings from 7:30 to 9. You may also email your questions and comments 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, to questions@policyofliberty.net. That's questions@policyofliberty.net.
You're listening to the Tyranny Response Network. Go ahead. Make your day.
Hi, this is Dr. John Coben. As many of you know that the Tyranny Response Network is listener-supported, and here's Gene Papke to tell you how you can support the Tyranny Response Network.
That's right, John. Folks, if you support TRN and you want to help financially, here's how. We at TRN are a listener-supported broadcast, but we don't take a notions, potions, and lotions approach to fundraising. If you own, operate, or work for a company with bad paper, that is, non-performing assets, we can turn that garbage into gold. Simply go to our website, NP Pros, that's N as in non, P as in profit, PROS as in professionals, your nonprofit professionals, that's npros.com. And remember, we raise funds, but without fundraisers.
Log on today to www.npros.com and find out how you can be a vital part in supporting the Tyranny Response Network.
And welcome back. We're talking this morning about the paper written by Dr. Rob Reich, professor of political science at Stanford University, paper entitled Testing the Boundaries of Parental Authority Over Education. The paper has a faulty premise, first of all, that there are three parties with an interest in education. Reich names the three parties as the parents, the state, and the child himself. In truth, there's only one party with an interest in education, and that party is the family. Reich correctly identifies the family's components, but he separates them into two competing groups, the parents and the child. Then he gives to the state, the party that we will contend has no legitimate interest in education, the role of referee. We'll examine the correct functions, if any, of each of these parties, refuting the faulty analysis presented in testing the boundaries. From the beginning, Professor Reich presumes that these three parties each have a legitimate interest in education, and rather than proving that presumption, he sets out immediately about his titular task of testing the boundaries of parental authority. He uses the words education, educational, and educationally over 250 times in his paper, yet he never actually defines education. Those facts alone identify his paper as ideological rather than scientific. That said, let's look at each of his premises about the presumptive interests of each party in the education of a child. Parents have but two interests in the education of their children, Reich claims. The first is self-regarding. The second is grounded in the interests of the children themselves. Reich offers the self-regarding interest as a sop after his assertion that children are, quote, not mere extensions of their parents. They are not their parents' property. And he says, parenting is for many people a central source of meaning in their lives, as part of their goal to have a family and live life as part of a family. Well, this view of the role of parents is practically insulting its brevity. If there are parents who endure 9 months of expectancy, then childbirth, teething, toddlerhood, potty training, and then 13 to 17 years of formal education merely because it adds meaning to their lives, and they do so because they were conditioned to act so unnaturally by a culture that has evolved to regard being trained to become human resources as a laudable goal and by means of the government's own school system. So Reich uses a less than attractive attribute of some parents inoculated into them by the government as a justification for lessening the role of all parents and for increasing the role of government. As to the interest of parents that's grounded in the interest of the child, this is true, Reich says, only because the normal proximity of adult parents to the dependent children situates them to act in the best interest of their children. However, he says, because judges routinely make rulings on the basis of the best interest of the child, Reich declares it's not of logical necessity that a child's parents are the agents who will act on these best interests. And because when parents are clearly negligent or harmful to the children, whether intentionally or not, the state intervenes and awards guardianship to a relative or foster care family, or in the most dire situation to the state itself, Reich asks, who is to say then that parents are best situated to pursue the best interests of their children? Well, that a professor of political science at a prestigious university should resort to such circular reasoning is just absurd. Speaking in support of a superior interest on the part of the state in the raising of children, Reich justifies the questioning of the parents' judgment about what constitutes the best interest of the child because state judges often determine that the parents are not best suited to determine what's in the best interest of the child. So then the state is right because the state usually says that it's right. Well, Reich next acknowledges that the best interest standard has religious overtones and concedes that there will be no readily identifiable consensus about the best interest of the child in all cases. So the professor takes a pass, suggesting that while parents are ideally situated not to realize the best interest of the child, they are best situated to meet the basic developmental needs of the children, food, shelter, clothing, protection, and not least, nurture, affection, and love. Having removed the best interest determination from the parents, Reich declares that the remaining basic developmental need interest does not yield any corresponding interest in control over educational provision. He writes, the greater substance one packs into the notion of a child's needs and interests, the greater claim one has to influence the education of the child, but the less likely there will be an objective agreement about what these needs and interests are. Conversely, the less substance one packs into the notion of a child's needs and interests, the more likely one will be to secure objective agreement about them, but only at the cost of failing to justify an interest in educational provision. Well, if that sounds like gobbledygook, what he's saying is that parents should feed, clothe, and shelter their children, but let the state control the training of their minds. Well, but agreement among whom? Reich writes about agreement. Nowhere has Reich made any case for any interest on the part of the state in any matter regarding with children, except in clear cases of parental negligence or physical harm to children. He just presumes that the state has such an oversight interest. He declares when conflicts about the education of children arise, parents cannot wield a trump card based solely on their own understanding of their child's best interests. And why not? because the state says so. He concludes, while parents clearly have substantial interest in the education of their children, it appears highly unlikely that they will be so weighty as to justify a claim that parents should command complete authority over the education of their children. Well, this is statism, and we reject that premise. The American state is the creation of the citizens, not the other way around. So what does Reich identify as the interest of the state in the education of children? His positions here are also presumptive and absurd. First, he proposes the state has an interest in providing children a civic education such that they're familiar with and able to participate in the political structures of society. And again, second, the state has an interest in performing a backstop role to the parents and assuring that children receive a basic education sufficient to allow them to become adults capable of independent functioning. Well, does the state have an interest in giving a civic education to young citizens in order to make them good citizens, ready to participate in the political structures of society? Again, folks, this position presupposes the superiority of the state and would place the citizens under the state rather than the state under we the people as its creator and master. Reich cites Yoder versus Wisconsin. There's no doubt as to the power of a state having a high responsibility for education of its citizens to impose reasonable regulations for the control and duration of a basic education. Providing public schools ranks at the very apex of the function of the state, he says. Well, that argument goes back to the history of education in America and the changes in state constitutions to make education a function of the state, a discussion for possibly tomorrow. But even Yoder does not jump to the position held here by Reich that the state has a responsibility to train its citizens to be good citizens. Think about that. That's obscene. The first American laws dealing with education, which I already cited to you, and also including the first state constitutions, acknowledge the need for citizens to be able to read the Bible in order to be good citizens, and for that reason alone supported the teaching of children to read. Today, the evidence tells us the state has a greater interest in dumbing down its citizens so that they will remain dependent upon the state, and the Bible and the Ten Commandments, which would lead us to hold the state accountable to a higher standard, are anathema. Well, Reich adds to the necessities for good citizenship a, quote, broad palette of critical thinking and empathy skills necessary to facilitate democratic deliberation amidst a multiplicity of competing interests and among diverse races, religions, and worldviews. But these are all value-laden and as such essentially religious and are thus forbidden by the First Amendment to be administered in any way by the state. We're going to take a break. We'll be back.
You're listening to the Tyranny Response Network. Go ahead. Make your day.
This is Dr. John Coben. Visit policyofliberty.net. That's www.policyofliberty.net on the web. You'll find there books and articles written by Dr. John Coben, that's me, the Tyranny Response Unit, regarding things related to covenant marriage, allodial land titles, and free market economics. You'll also find there portraits of famous economists, including their biographical information and links to their famous works, as well as many, many quotations for liberty. Visit policyofliberty.net on the web today and find a wealth of information to help advancement of the truth.
Liberalism is not to be tossed lightly aside, but to be hurled with great force.
Pizza Palace, guaranteed hot in 30 minutes or it's free. This is Mary. May I take your order?
Hi, Mary. Yes, I'd like to order.
Is this Mr. Kelly?
Yes.
Thank you for calling again, sir. I share your national identification number as 610-204-9998-45-54610. Is that correct?
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Kelly. I see you live at 736 Montrose Court, but you're calling from your cell phone. Are you at home?
I'm just leaving work, but I'm...
Oh, we can deliver to Bob's Auto Supply. That's at 175 Lincoln Avenue, yes?
No, I'm on my way home. How do you know all this stuff?
We just got wired into the system, sir.
Oh, well, I'd like to order a couple of your double meat special pizzas.
Sure thing. There'll be a new $20 charge for those, sir.
What do you mean?
Sir, the system shows me that your medical records indicate that you have high blood pressure and extremely high cholesterol. Luckily, we have a new agreement with your national health care provider that allows us to sell you double meat pies, as long as you agree to waive all future claims of liability.
What?
Do you agree, sir? You can sign the form when we deliver, but there is a charge for processing. The total is $67 even.
$67?
Well, that includes the delivery surcharge of $15 to cover the added risk to our driver of traveling through an orange zone.
I live in an orange zone?
Now you do. Looks like there was another robbery on Montrose yesterday. You could save $48 if you ordered our special Sprout Submarine Combo and picked it up yourself. Comes with tofu sticks. Those are very tasty, sir. Good value, too.
But I want double meat.
Well, I'm sure you can afford the $67, then. You just bought those tickets to Hawaii. They weren't cheap, eh? Oh, but I see you checked out the budget beach bum at the library last week. Up to you, sir.
All right. I'll get the Sprout subs.
Good choice, sir. Gotta watch that waist if you're hitting the beach, eh? 42 inches. Wow. Man, I'd say tofu and sprouts is, like, required.
That's how much?
Just between you and me, there's a $3 off coupon in this month's Total Men's Fitness magazine. Your wife Betty subscribes to that, right? Anyhow, clip that and it's $19.99 even. Whoa, looks like you maxed out on all your credit cards. Bring cash, okay?
Well, that made my day, folks, and I hope it made yours as well. Welcome back. We're talking about Rob Reich and his efforts to control homeschooling. We're talking about him wanting to clamp down on parents and control the education that would come from the state under his regime. But he never makes his point, simply that the state has a legitimate interest in educational authority based on providing education and providing children with the capacities to become able citizens, except on his own say-so, and he provides no support for his argument. Thus, his position is intellectually vacuous and invalid on its face. His assignment to the state of the backstop role to parents in ensuring that children receive some basic minimum of schooling such that they can develop into adults who are capable of independent functioning is equally inane and an affront to both the First Amendment limitations on the state in religious matters and the subordinate role of the state to we the people. Reich says that all children need to grow into adults who possess a baseline set of social, emotional, and intellectual competencies that enable them to navigate and participate in the familiar social and economic institutions of society. Well, some of these considerations have to do with basic functioning in the adult world, more so than the aforementioned exercise of citizenship, and to those I offer no objection. My concession, however, does not include any assumption that the state has any legitimate role to play in providing even this most basic education. The American economy, after all, is not one based on collectivism, where the state owns or controls the means of production, so it doesn't fall to the state to train workers, much less to give them, quote, the capacity to lead a life amidst the main social and economic institutions of society. Well, since parents are, quote, better situated than the state to know their children's particular learning needs and abilities, Reich grants, the state exercises authority over education only in a backstop role. It provides publicly funded schools and requires attendance in school until a specified age. Parents can choose from a wide variety of options to fulfill these educational requirements, but when parents impede the development of these baseline competencies through intentional or unintentional abuse or neglect, then the state should intervene, he maintains. Furthermore, when the state's and the parents' interests clash, he contends, the appropriate question is how such interests might best be balanced. But again, all of this is premised on the state having any legitimate interest in education. Reich considers this much to be uncontroversial. Both parents and the state have clear interests in education that lead to legitimate claims to exert authority over educational provision. Well, I hardly disagree. The state has no valid interest in the education of the child, and Reich has offered not a single argument nor a shred of evidence beyond status quo and historical precedent to support his pro-state position. Reich then moves on to what's perhaps an even more controversial position, that the child himself, apart from his parents, has an interest in becoming educated, and not just education for the sake of becoming adults capable of independent functioning, but education for autonomy. Yes, Reich writes, these interests of the child will likely clash with those of the parents in the state, though, thank goodness, he agrees that children may not be best suited to supervise the promotion of these interests or even to articulate them. About the first interest of the child in education, that of developing into an adult capable of independent functioning, there's little disagreement. In fact, if Reich would just go ahead and identify that as the definition of education, relegating the provision of academic subjects to a position of relatively minor importance, as have many of his professional colleagues in government and academia, we could cut right to the chase of the whole argument and discuss who should legitimately be defining what constitutes an adult capable of independent functioning. It's on Reich's second interest to the child in education, autonomy, that we seriously part company. Children have an interest in becoming minimally autonomous, he declares, possessing the capacity to develop and pursue their own interests, and if they so choose, to participate ably as equal citizens in democratic deliberation about the exercise of political power. He further defines this minimal autonomy as the capacity of the child to develop into an independent adult who can seek and promote his or her own interests as he or she understands them, and who can participate, if he or she chooses, in political dialogue with others. But he makes no allowance for parental involvement in teaching the child what actually is in the child's best interests. Then Reich commits his most egregious error. This need for a minimal degree of autonomy precludes the possibility that children will be ethically servile. He continues, because children are not the property of the parents or of the state. In fact, if they are not, then Reich has no legal standing for his argument on behalf of the state. Because they possess human dignity as independent beings, they ought not to be educated so as to be made servile to the caretakers. Neither parents nor the state can justly attempt to imprint indelibly upon a child a set of values and beliefs as if it were an inheritance one should never be able to question, as if the child must always defer and be obedient. Well, there you have it. A child must not be ethically servile to anybody, not to the parents, not to the state, or anybody. As a participant in it, Reich will not discuss the fact that since the same plutocracy owns the education system, the teacher colleges, the textbook publishing houses, the funding mechanisms, the PTA, 95% of the American media, the banking system, the American Bar Association, thus the courts, both political parties, etc., servility, ethical and otherwise, to the state is programmed in and virtually unavoidable. No single person or entity, Reich says, has the right to shape the thoughts and values of the child. No, he says, the child must be free to choose those for himself. When we come back, we'll talk about how Reich says those things should be assured.
You're listening to TRN.
Public schools will never excel because they lack intellectual capital and have to compensate for too many social problems. Daniel Golden.
Hi, this is Dr. John Coben with Integrity Group. Why is it so difficult for Christians to be good stewards of their finances? We know that God works miracles in people's lives, but He has not chosen to provide manna from above to help us meet our needs as He did with the ancient Israelites. As Christians, we should be leading the way as good stewards. Since we do not spend money on vices like non-Christians do, we should be able to save more. We want to work hard and save our money so that we can have something to give to missions and to the needy. In addition, we want to regularly set aside a portion for retirement. Christians should not have to rely on taxpayer-funded government programs for retirement. No Christian wants to become a burden to their family or church during the ever-lengthening period of old age. At Integrity Group, we are dedicated to providing personalized service, finding effective ways to protect and increase your hard-earned money. We are an independent financial planning firm. We specialize in finding creative custom solutions to meet your savings needs. Our offices are located at 514 Pettigrew Street in downtown Greenville. Make an appointment with Integrity Group today at 864-244-6464. That's 864-244-6464.
Life, liberty, and property do not exist because men have made laws. On the contrary, it was the fact that life, liberty, and property existed beforehand that caused men to make laws in the first place. Frederick Bastiat.
Warning. Dr. Coben's show is not recommended for anyone with an aversion to deep thinking and critical analysis.
If you have a question or comment for the show, please dial 864-201-6955. That's 864-201-6955, weekday mornings from 7:30 to 9. You may also email your questions and comments 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, to questions@policyofliberty.net. That's questions@policyofliberty.net.
Welcome to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. Dr. Coben is an author, columnist, financial planner, and international lecturer. He holds a Ph.D. degree in public policy, M.A. degrees in economics and business economics, and is a graduate of Reformed Bible College. Dr. Coben is an outspoken critic of public schools, government regulation, the IRS, paper money, welfare, and abortion. An evangelical Christian and the father of 6 homeschooled children, Dr. Coben is applauded by listeners across America and around the world as a champion of liberty, limited government, free markets, and peace. Now let's join Dr. Coben with Christian Worldview.
Good morning and welcome back to the TRN Network. This is Ben Graydon sitting in this morning for Dr. John Coben with Pure Education, Parents United in Responsibility for Education. Our website is pureeducation.com, pureducation.com. You can also reach us at 1-800-871-8651. If you're interested in some more of the things that we provide, we have a comprehensive education, by the way. We teach homeschooling and all the other things that go into it. We mentioned Dr. Reich and his the problems that we have with the state, the fact that the teacher colleges, the textbook houses, the funding mechanisms, the PTA, 95% of the American media, the banking system, the American Bar Association, the courts, the medical cartel, the political parties, etc. All these things have us under their thumb. We teach people how to get free from that and how to live free and all that they do. And for some more information about that, you can call this number, 618-355-1178. Again, that's 618-355-1178. We'll be having a meeting in the Traveler's Rest area here just north of Greenville next weekend, not this Saturday, but next on the 26th at the Traveler's Rest branch of the library. We'll talk a little bit more about that tomorrow, but it'll be from 9:30 in the morning to 1 o'clock in the afternoon. The meeting is free and open to the public. We'd love to have you come out to find out some more about how you can be free in all these areas of your life when it comes to educating your children into being free financially, reducing your taxes, and getting free of debt and learning to live the way God intended for you to live as an investor. You think of the story of Jesus and the parable he told about the man who had one talent and five and ten. They were to go out and invest that money, and the one who hid his money, he buried it and he stuck it in the bank. He dug a hole in the ground. Of course, he was condemned, and then the money that he had was given to those that had ten and went out and invested his money and doubled the master's money. And we know that's the way that the Lord would have us to use our money. Well, anyway, back to Dr. Reich and what he's doing here in trying to minimize the input of parents and homeschooling and so forth. He assures that that the state would be in charge of education, and the parents' role be minimized by exposing a child to and engaging a child with diverse values and beliefs. Thereby, a child learns to think for himself or herself enough to surpass the threshold of ethical servility, he says. So the child must be exposed to some variety of other people who have diverse values and beliefs. Well, thus, rudderless and without an anchor and unmoored from any set of guiding values and beliefs, the child is left to be, as the Apostle Paul so aptly described, tossed to and fro and carried about with every wind of doctrine by the sleight of man, cunning craftiness, whereby they lie in wait to deceive. Well, it's no coincidence the primary goal of homeschooling is to minimize and strictly control this exposure of children to influences outside the home that may negatively impact the inculcation of the parents' own values and beliefs into the lives of their children. And Reich knows this. He concedes this about why some parents choose to homeschool. The coercive power of peer pressure may in some cases be too much for children to resist. Well, I'd hold that is true in every case. That homeschooled children often outperform their public and private school counterparts in scholastic achievement. There's the dirty secret he doesn't want to talk about. He even goes so far as to admit that with respect to the child's interest in developing autonomy and to the shared interest in academic achievement, homeschools can sometimes be more effective than traditional campus-based schools. For these reasons, he writes, it would be unjust for the state to ban homeschooling. However, the fact that they sometimes succeed or are sometimes practically necessary does not imply that the state should grant educational authority to parents whenever they express a desire to homeschool, he declares. But he misses the point that the current requirement for parents to get permission from the state to educate their own children really makes his entire paper moot. There's no balancing of interests where the state must always have the final word. And furthermore, parental authority must end when its exercise compromises the development of their children into adults capable of independent functioning, or when it disables or retards the development of minimal autonomy in children, he says. And just so that there's no mistake about it, Reich identifies specifically what parents he's talking about, parents who wish to control the socialization of their children so completely as to instill inerrant beliefs in their own worldview or unquestioning obedience to their own or others' authority. Reich cites author Myra Levinson, who wrote The Demands of Liberal Education, in making his case for the separation of the child from his parents in order to afford him that minimal autonomy. If we take the requirements of autonomy seriously, he writes, or she writes, we see the need for a place separate from the environment in which children are raised, specifically that children must attend institutional schools in order to achieve autonomy. Note that Reich does not attack any of the institutional educational opportunities that are available to parents, only homeschooling, the option which he regards as the most likely to hamper the development of his much-vaunted minimal autonomy. It's important, by the way, that we note this emphasis on schooling in an institutional setting for what Reich points out that it does and does not do. He does not agree with Levinson's presumptive support of banning homeschooling, only with enough regulation of it to avoid ethical servility. To achieve minimal autonomy requires that a child know that there are ways of life other than that into which he or she has been born, he writes. So the worst thing that could happen is for the educational environment to simply replicate in every particularity the values and beliefs of a child's home. While Reich never defines it, education is, according to Benjamin Rush, one of the signers of the Declaration of Independence, the transfer of values from one generation to the next. I mentioned that earlier. Education is the transfer of values from one generation to the next. Well, this is something very different from minimal autonomy. Yes, a child must learn how to function as an independent adult in an adult world, but to do so properly, the child must learn that there are rules that must be followed. The goal when teaching a child how to operate an automobile upon the highway is not minimal autonomy, but adherence to the rules of the road. Furthermore, exposing a child to multiple values and beliefs in order that he may freely choose his own is not even scientifically legitimate. The more exposure of the immature child to various options, especially without guidance from a more mature adult, the less likely that the child will ever be to be secure in believing anything. What of those parents who are eager to prevent their children from being exposed to anything contrary to the moral and spiritual values they wish their children to learn? Reich answers that in the interest of children, these are risks that must be accepted, for parents cannot be entitled as a matter of justice to ensure that their child grows up to become exactly the kind of person that they want him or her to be. Well, says who? Says the state. The state, therefore, according to Reich, must ensure that all children, regardless of the environment in which they are schooled, receive an education that exposes them to and engages them with values and beliefs other than those that they find at home. So you see, it is for all the children, Reich claims, our children are owed as a matter of justice the capacity to choose to lead lives, to adopt values and beliefs, to pursue an occupation, endorse new traditions that are different from those of their parents. Because the child cannot him or herself ensure the acquisition of such capacities, and the parents may be opposed to such acquisition, the state must ensure it for him. The state must guarantee that children are educated for minimal autonomy. Thus, on this analysis, the state must not forbid homeschooling, but regulate it so as to ensure that the interests of the state and the child are met. Then Reich goes on to make another case for the children, at least the older one, being allowed to decide whether or not they should be homeschooled or institutionalized, and the state's responsibility to support and enforce that decision. Bottom line, when the state believes that the interest of the child in becoming minimally autonomous is threatened, intervention is justified. Contrary to much current practice in the United States, the state must therefore regulate and monitor homeschooling and enforce its regulations, says Rob Reich. We'll have some more when we come back from this break.
Warning. Dr. Coben's show is not recommended for anyone with an aversion to deep thinking and critical analysis.
The people never give up their liberties, but under some delusion. Edmund Burke.
Hi, this is Dr. John Coben. As many of you know that the Tyranny Response Network is listener-supported, and here's Gene Papke to tell you how you can support the Tyranny Response Network.
That's right, John. Folks, if you support TRN and you want to help financially, here's how. We at TRN are a listener-supported broadcast, but we don't take a notions, potions, and lotions approach to fundraising. If you own, operate, or work for a company with bad paper, that is, non-performing assets, we can turn that garbage into gold. Simply go to our website, NP Pros, that's N as in non, P as in profit, PROS as in professionals, your nonprofit professionals, that's nppros.com. And remember, we raise funds, but without fundraisers.
Log on today to www.nppros.com and find out how you can be a vital part in supporting the Tyranny Response Network.
In Common Sense, Thomas Paine writes, Could we take off the dark covering of antiquity pertaining to the origin of kings and of the state and trace them to their first rise, we should find the first of them nothing better than the principal ruffian of some restless gang, whose savage manners or preeminence subtly obtained him the title of chief among plunderers, and who by increasing in power and extending his depredations overawed the quiet and defenseless to purchase their safety by frequent contributions.
If you have a question or comment for the show, please dial 864-201-6955. That's 864-201-6955, weekday mornings from 7:30 to 9. You may also email your questions and comments 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, to questions@policyofliberty.net. That's questions@policyofliberty.net.
You're listening to TRN, the Tyranny Response Network. It's roughage for your brain.
And welcome back. The regulations of homeschools that Rob Reich proposes are both dangerous and laughable on their face. For example, Reich states that the burden of proof that homeschools will satisfy the state's and the child's interest in education must rest with the parents who express the desire to homeschool. But what of the settled principles of jurisprudence that holds that an accused party is innocent until proven guilty? Then he says parents must demonstrate to relevant educational officials that their particular homeschooling arrangements are up to determined educational standards. Ha! With homeschooled students winning the national spelling and geography bee every year, and with tax-funded government schools nationwide continually losing ground in academic test scores, the government demands the right to determine the educational standards by which homeschools will be judged? That's a joke. But remember, the state's educational standards, as underscored by Professor Reich, have nothing to do with academics and everything to do with values and beliefs. Next, because the state must ensure that the school environment provides exposure to and engagement with values and beliefs other than those of a child's parents, the state should require parents to use curricula that provides such exposure and engagement. Well, notice, folks, the mixing of values and beliefs, which is largely taught by contact with others, as Reich has so well described, with curricula. Again, this is a tacit admission that textbooks have been written with an eye specifically towards influencing not academic knowledge, but ideological and inescapably religious values and beliefs. And finally, the state should require homeschooled children to take annual standardized tests to measure academic progress. If a child repeatedly fails to make academic progress relative to his or her peers in public or private schools, the state should intervene and compel school attendance. I wish I had some time to go into who writes those tests and what they're designed to do. But Reich clearly has no interest in making mere academics the measure of educational quality, so this demand has no merit. Reich plainly has a gross misunderstanding of what form of government, legally on paper anyway, comprises the United States. He seems to understand when he writes, "For the exercise of the state's power to be legitimate, citizens must freely consent to the principles of justice on which the state is founded." But he gives the farm away when he comes back with, quote, "It is not that deeply religious parents refuse to acknowledge the power of the state generally, for such a position in a liberal democracy would be clearly untenable." The United States of America, folks, is not a liberal democracy. It's a constitutional republic. And if it were a liberal democracy, Reich's glorified vision of an all-seeing, all-knowing, beneficent state would be inconsistent with it. But Reich is clearly unmoored from the Constitution, as proven by statements such as, "Even given the deep importance of religious freedom, the state cannot relinquish its regulatory role in education in cases where parents invoke their religious beliefs as a bulwark against secular authority." Plainly, the First Amendment has something quite different to say. In Reich's own description of the value-laden purpose of education, instilling minimal autonomy by exposing children to values and beliefs different from those at home, firmly categorizes education as something that must always be regarded as under the First Amendment umbrella. Reich's paper is extremely significant in that it correctly identifies the primary purpose of education as the imparting of values and beliefs, something very different from the strictly academic vision that most lay people have of schooling. Education is something far greater than book learning in mathematics, language, science, and history. It's the transfer of values from one generation to the next. In this regard, homeschooling is the only legitimate educational arrangement, unless the parent has no regard for freedom, has no important values and beliefs, and or is content to relegate his most awesome responsibility to someone else. Here even many homeschoolers miss the point, as they go out of their way to assure that their children are properly socialized, taking them to sports programs and on field trips, schooling them in co-ops and group activities, and even sometimes fighting to gain access to some of the government school programs that their tax dollars have paid for and to which they thus are entitled. Well, at this, Professor Reich positively salivates. There are a host of open questions about the consequences of homeschool-public school partnerships, but to the extent that bringing children back within a campus-based school environment conduces to meeting the interests of the state and the child in education, especially to the extent that it brings children into social and intellectual contact with other children of diverse backgrounds, such partnerships should not be summarily dismissed or discouraged. In fact, finding ways to draw homeschooling families back to the public school system seems to me a necessary complement to the passage of effective regulations. Folks, education is not to be focused on the state, though the statists like Rob Reich have found it to be the most essential tool for the preservation of their power. Neither is it to be focused primarily on individuals, and with this, Reich agrees. And to the extent that it does focus on the individual, it's only to help the individual fit into a group. Rice says that focal group is the state. I say it's the family. Education is a process for providing generational continuity in the values and beliefs of the family, which is arguably the only institution on earth ordained by God. To argue that the state should have any controlling interest in the education of children is to argue against the freedom that was America's founding genius. For the freedom-loving American, especially those whose values and beliefs are founded on biblical truth, homeschooling is a must. Even the private school option offered by many local church assemblies by its very institutional nature accomplishes the most essential state goal that Reich trumpets, minimal autonomy, by exposing children to values and beliefs that differ from those of their parents and must be, for that very reason, shunned. While children do not belong to their parents, they are lent to them by God for their education and instruction. In truth, nothing else belongs to anyone either. It's all God's, entrusted to us for our care for only a season. Yet every war that's ever been fought has been to take or to defend something about the ownership of which two parties have disagreed. And what can possibly be of greater interest to us among our caretaking charges than our children? The state wants them, but as God gives us strength, it cannot and it will not have them. Anyway, folks, that's Rob Reich's take on homeschooling and why it should be regulated. When we come back from the break in just a moment, we will look at what the Bible says about education, about whose responsibility it is, and what we as parents should do to be involved.
Disinfecting the modern mainstream media, Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben.
We have the rights as individuals to give as much of our own money as we please to charity, but as members of Congress, we have no right so to appropriate a dollar of public money. Congressman Davy Crockett.
You're listening to the Tyranny Response Network. Go ahead, make your day.
The law of non-contradiction. The same thing cannot at the same time both belong and not belong to the same object and in the same respect. Aristotle.
This is Dr. John Coben. Visit policyofliberty.net. That's www.policyofliberty.net on the web. You'll find there books and articles written by Dr. John Coben, that's me, the Tyranny Response Unit, regarding things related to covenant marriage, allodial land titles, and free market economics. You'll also find there portraits of famous economists, including their biographical information and links to their famous works, as well as many, many quotations for liberty. Visit policyofliberty.net on the web today and find a wealth of information to help advancement of the truth.
If you have a question or comment for the show, please dial 864-201-6955. That's 864-201-6955, weekday mornings from 7:30 to 9. You may also email your questions and comments 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, to questions@policyofliberty.net. That's questions@policyofliberty.net.
Liberalism is not to be tossed lightly aside, but to be hurled with great force.
All right, folks, let's give you some true liberalism here this morning. This is liberalism in the good sense, in the sense of full and plenty and running over. What does God say about homeschooling, about education? Well, Proverbs is replete with instruction to parents to teach or train their own children and to the children to heed their own parents' instruction. The book itself is addressed to my son as a father speaking to his son. The pattern is clear, as is the teaching. My son, hear the instruction of thy father, and forsake not the law of thy mother. For they shall be an ornament of grace unto thy head and chains about thy neck. Hear ye, children, the instruction of a father. Attend to no understanding, for I give you good doctrine. Forsake ye not my law. For I was my father's son, tender and only beloved in the sight of my mother. He, my father, taught me also and said unto me, Let thine heart retain my words, keep my commandments and live. From Proverbs 4. Hear, my son, receive my sayings, and the years of thy life shall be many. My son, attend to my words. My son, attend to my wisdom. Hear me now, therefore, you children, depart not from the words of my mouth. My son, keep thy father's commandment, forsake not the law of thy mother. My son, keep my words, and lay up my commandments with thee. A wise son maketh a glad father. A foolish son is the heaviness of his mother. A wise son heareth his father's instruction, but a scorner heareth not rebuke. A fool despiseth his father's instruction, but he that regardeth reproof is prudent. Train up a child in the way he should go. When he's old, he'll not depart from it. Correct thy son, and he shall give thee rest. Yea, he shall give delight unto thy soul. The books of the law command parents to teach their children. From Deuteronomy chapter 4. Now therefore hearken, O Israel, unto the statutes, to the judgments which I teach you, for to do them, that ye may live and go in and possess the land which the Lord God of your fathers giveth you. Only take heed to thyself and keep thy soul diligently, lest thou forget the things which thine eyes have seen, lest they depart from thy heart all the days of thy life. But get this, teach them to thy sons and thy sons' sons. Especially the day that thou stoodest before the Lord thy God in Horeb, when the Lord said unto me, Gather me the people together, and I will make them hear my words, that they may learn to fear me all the days that they shall live upon the earth, and that they may teach their children. Also from Deuteronomy chapter 6, And these words which I command thee this day shall be in thine heart, and thou shalt teach them diligently unto thy children, shalt talk of them when thou sittest in thine house, when thou walkest by the way, when thou liest down, when thou risest up. Deuteronomy 11, Therefore shall ye lay up these words, these my words, in your heart and your soul, bind them for a sign upon your hand, that they may be as frontless between your eyes, and you shall teach them to your children, speaking of them when thou sittest in thine house, when thou walkest by the way, when thou liest down, when thou risest up. David described a well-trained homeschooled child. Lo, children are an heritage of the Lord, and the fruit of the womb is his reward. As arrows are in the hand of a mighty man, so are children of the youth. Happy is the man that hath his quiver full of them. They shall not be ashamed, but they shall speak with the enemies in the gate. And Paul instructed fathers not just in how to discipline, but in what was to be their responsibility towards their children, to educate them. And ye fathers, provoke not your children to wrath, but bring them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord, in Ephesians chapter 6. And in Titus he writes, the aged women also, that they may be in behavior as becometh holiness, not false accusers, not given to much wine, teachers of good things, that they may teach the young women to be sober, to love their husbands, to love their children, to be discreet, chaste, keepers at home, good, obedient to their own husbands, that the word of God be not blasphemed. Folks, we're Parents United in responsibility for education. We're helping parents to understand that it's their job to train their children and not to give that job to someone else. Unfortunately, many of us do that. We delegate our jobs to someone else. We think that if we put our children in a Christian school operated by a church that we've done our job. But folks, I would urge you, go back to Scripture. Go back and read the Word of God and see what God's Word says about it. Is it possible for to use someone else to help with your responsibilities? Listen, if you want to teach your son auto mechanics, you should probably find somebody who knows more about it than somebody who's never gotten his knuckles dirty underneath an automobile, and that's fine. But you can do that under your control, and that's a different issue from turning your children over to someone else. So we're for parents being in charge of education. However parents see to do that, folks, it's your responsibility. Raise your own children. Do not give them to the state. We can show you how to do that. Homeschooling is legal in all 50 states. It's not difficult to do. A homeschooler is just a parent who's learning to coach his child in more ways than one. I get this objection sometimes. Well, what about calculus? What about physics? You know, I'm a high school dropout. And I ask, well, then how old is little Johnny? Johnny's 4. Well, you know what? It's probably not going to be an issue right away, so you've got some time on your hands. But anything that you can learn, you can teach to your child. And it's not an issue of superior knowledge that you're coming from. It's an issue of being able to coach your child and to help your child to find his way, because the knowledge, the education is going to take place in his brain, not in yours. Folks, Parents United and Responsibility for Education, check out our website, please, www.pureeducation.com. Share the E with those two words, run them together as one word. We'd be happy to get you some information there. You can give us a call, leave us a message at 1-800-871-8651. As I said earlier, we provide education working with other groups as well about more than just homeschooling, about parental responsibility, but in other areas of life as well. Would you like to reduce your taxes? Would you like to reduce your debt? Would you like to put more of that money back in your pocket? Have you read Robert Kiyosaki, Rich Dad, Poor Dad, and Cash Flow Quadrant, about how people live in one of four quadrants? You're either an employee, you're self-employed, you're a business owner, or you're an investor. An investor is one who lives off passive income. That's what our Lord taught in the parables in Matthew about the man who had the one talent, the five talent, the 10 talents, gave them to the three different servants and said, go do something with this. And the two that went out and invested their money and brought it back, those were the ones that were blessed. And you notice what they said to their master. We know that you're a man who gathers where you haven't sown. That was a man who lived off his investments, not a man who worked off the sweat of his brow. Not that there's anything wrong with hard work. We should work, but we should work wisely. If you'd like some more information about how to do that, how to situate your life, there's some information available for you at 618-355-1178. Again, that's 618-355-1178. Be happy to share some of that information with you. Again, we're hosting a seminar, not this weekend, but next Saturday, the 26th of March, at the Traveler's Rest Library. You can call me for information about that at the 1-800-871-8651 number. Be happy to get back with you on that as far as directions and so forth. But that'll be Saturday, the 26th of March, at the Traveler's Rest branch of the Granville County Library. And that'll be from 9:30 until 1 o'clock in the afternoon. Be sure to read our column in the Times Examiner. If you're not an examiner and a subscriber, you should be. The number there is 864-268-0576. Again, we're glad to be sitting in this morning for Dr. John Coben. I understand he'll be back later on this week, but I'll be back with you tomorrow to talk some more about education, about our system, our situation that we're in, how to get out of it, how to get control, and hopefully we'll have a call-in guest as well. Thank you, folks. Have a good morning.
You've been listening to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben on TRN. Join us again tomorrow morning right here at 97.7 FM on the Tyranny Response Network for Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben.
Hi, this is Dr. John Coben with Integrity Group. Let's consider Christian stewardship in terms of financial planning, saving, eliminating debt, lessening the burdens that can accompany a serious illness or accident. One of the most important reasons that we acquire life, disability, and long-term care insurance is because we want to love our neighbors as ourselves. After all, what kind of testimony do we give if we actually plan to rely on the charity of others? If we love others, especially our church and family members, we should do careful financial planning. Some Christians have 401k plans and need to be rolled over into a better investment alternative. Still others need to protect their wives and children by purchasing some inexpensive life or health insurance. At Integrity Group, we are dedicated to providing personalized service. As an independent financial planning firm with a wide range of products, we're here to help you become a better financial steward. Find out about our many services at 514 Pettigrew Street in downtown Greenville. Make an appointment with Integrity Group today at 864-244-6464. That's 864-244-6464.